This episode of the FitCast is brought to you by the PTAdvantage.com, an online personal training solution to help trainers save time and make more money. You can check them out at the PTAdvantage.com. Hello and welcome to this episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 279. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me this week, we're going to have coming up Mike Boyle in just a minute. And then after that, we're actually going to be talking with Peter Barber of the PTAdvantage.com and going over some really cool business stuff, the hiring process. If you own a business, like, he has some awesome tips and some lessons that he's learned when hiring new people. And we actually get into a pretty in-depth discussion on business and the fitness industry. Some really interesting stuff in there. So I hope you stick around. Before we get into that, we're actually going to be talking with Mike Boyle. So let's jump into that first.
I have Michael Boyle back on the show. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Kevin. How are you? I can't believe 279, huh?
Yeah, you know, been sticking with it. And again, this is one of those lucky coincidences. This has helped me meet you in my career. So it's been good. It has actually been like a year since we've had you on the show. That's also kind of flown by as well. But we have a ton of questions sent in from the audience. And really, you've been staying incredibly busy, of course, coming off of the World Series win with the Red Sox. And I don't know if you could start off talking a little bit about that experience, because we haven't really talked about that on the FitCast.
A pretty amazing thing, particularly at this stage of your career, to be able to get involved with something like that and to have it happen that fast. So it's sort of like being on an amazing ride at Disney World, where you just realize, wow, I can't believe all this stuff happened. It's obviously it's a really long year, so it's sort of is compounded a little bit, because all of a sudden you're like, wow, now we're in the playoffs. But the schedule is a little bit kinder in the playoffs, because you actually get some off days. Baseball is a very strange sport in the sense that they're basically, after spring training, there are no practices. So every day is game day. Thank you. But, you've got game day every day. And when you have an off day, everybody's off. No one's coming in for practice. And then suddenly you get into the playoffs and you've got practices. And it's a really interesting, I sort of become very intrigued by baseball, by the whole process, by the process of pitching. And there's just so many things about it that I find really interesting. So I had a lot of fun. You know, it's a long grind, as you said. It's really busy between trying to be at MBSC and do what I'm doing from an online standpoint and trying to be at the Red Sox. It's pretty challenging, be perfectly honest, to try to get all this stuff done in the course of a day. But the flip side of it is it's also a lot of fun.
One of the things that we wanted to that we're going to talk about a couple times is PRI, because Michael Mullen has come in a couple times now to MBSC to do in services on PRI. And we got a question in from Paul, who wanted to know, he actually watched the PRI videos on Body by Boyle online. And he was wondering, after having Michael Mullen back in again, have we implemented any of the PRI techniques in our programming with our adult or athlete groups?
I would say yes, we have. I would say we're still in the infancy. I think the biggest thing that we've probably instituted is just the idea of trying to get people to work on breathing. I think, to me, that might have been the biggest thing, and that was probably the thing that I was most skeptical about. Yet it's probably the thing that I find myself doing the most with my clients. I really feel like, and we wrote up a PRI warm-up, which we've been doing with some of the groups, and I think that's something that we need to be more kind of committed to. And I'm looking forward, in all honesty, we're going to have another in-service. I'm looking forward to getting more into the hands-on practical stuff next time we have an in-service, so that I'm more comfortable with what we're doing and how we're doing it. So I would say, yes, we've instituted some. No, we probably have not instituted enough. But the breathing by itself, I do think, has a lot of value.
since we kind of started off the top talking about Body by Boyle Online, for people out there that haven't really checked this out, I don't really talk about it a lot on the show, but again, one of those things that kind of flies by. We've just passed our third year on Body by Boyle Online. We have over like 135 hours of just educational video content, not even talking about the programs that we use at MBSC and also things like our staff meetings, all those in-services. Mike, obviously this is something we wanted to talk a little bit about. What's it kind of like just to be 3 years into this and to, see all that stuff that really has gone on in our gym? It's just kind of crazy, all the continuing education that we have there.
It is amazing. And Anthony Renner always talks about the super trainers at MBSC, and you can kind of see why people get really good, because we really put some emphasis on education. And to be perfectly honest, I know for me, I lean on my contacts. There are some people that have done great stuff for us, whether it's Charlie Weingraff stopping off on his way to perform better, or Sue Falsoni stopping in, or Joe Sanzalone and Tim Anderson stopping in. We've been able to get some really good people to come up and give us these in-services and help us to educate our staff and help us to just get better. So and then I guess the big difference is we are extending that to this much bigger community, so that we've got people. I meet people all the time who say really funny things like, I watch the staff meeting every week. It's my staff meeting because I work by myself. So I sit in and I watch the staff meeting. And I think that's really amazing to think that our staff meeting is sort of like this running television show that these people watch every week. But there is just a massive amount of really, really interesting information between the PRI stuff and original strength stuff and Charlie stuff. I mean, there's just so much information that's available on the site. I think one of the things that we talked about is the bad part is a little overwhelming. Because I just think even the video library, we were in the video library the other day, you and I, with Dwayne Carlisle from Purdue, and just that by itself, I bet there's a ton of people that are members who don't go in the video library and just watch the videos of each exercise. And I think what's most interesting to me is that this started out, we thought we were going to do online training, and we've probably done almost zero online training, and it's become a really good online educational resource for people. So it's kind of interesting the way these things morph on their own and change and become maybe, in this case, probably something more than what we thought it was going to be.
We have an interesting question coming from Kent, a little bit different than what we normally get. He said, Mike, an honest question. How does training change for experienced lifters over 40? My particular case is that I'm a former natural competitive bodybuilder. I never stopped lifting, but I am noticing I just can't pull my PRs like I used to. What should I expect in my future? And does training progress change and stop as you age?
I actually read that one on, I don't know whether that was a Twitter or a Facebook one, but I read that question already. And it kind of made me laugh, because you said, what should I expect? And I started laughing to myself, you can expect to get worse. But, because that's the reality. Aging is a reality. And I think we've got to realize when you start talking about hitting your PRs, if you look at what you did when you were 20 or what you looked at, what you did when you were 30, do I think it is realistic to think that you can maintain that? Probably not. But the other thing I think about is that let's just say, as a for instance, that he bench pressed 300 pounds when he was at his best. If he can bench press 270 right now, he's maintained 90% of his strength, which is pretty good. And if he was only at 240, that would still be 80% of his strength. So I think some of it is just looking at things differently and realizing that it's almost like saying, I'm getting up into my 40s and I don't want to get any older. Is there some way to stop the aging process? And my answer would be, no, there really isn't. I think you can fight it tooth and nail with really good training and really good diet and all the things that we talk about all the time in terms of trying to delay the inevitable. But I think the inevitable is going to happen. It's like saying, I have a car and I drive it every day, but I don't want the mileage to go up. Well, the mileage is going to go up whether you want it to or not. We're putting miles on every day and we can't really roll back the odometer. We can do some funny things, I think, to try. But if you're already, something like that, you're a natural bodybuilder, so you know how to eat. You're a natural bodybuilder, so you know how to train. You're doing resistance training. You're probably doing the vast majority of the things that we would recommend to you to do as you age in terms of supplementing, eating a good diet, and strength training. So can you expect to hit your PRs? No. I always think what we want to do is age gracefully and realize that there is some inevitability to this. But the one thing I always tell everybody, every year I get older, I look better for my age. Because I haven't changed very much between 30 and 54. So maybe at 30 I wasn't in very good shape, and now at 54 people are like, wow, you're in great shape at 54. So I think that's the big part of the battle, is just to some degree being a little bit of a realist.
We got a question actually coming in from, I was talking to Peter, who has a MBSC Thrive over in Switzerland this morning, and he had a question about conditioning with the adult groups, because we've been kind of playing around with doing some, you know, light shuttles with our adult groups at MBSC, and he was kind of worried about adults kind of pulling up with hamstring issues and stuff like that. So he was wondering, how do you gauge whether an adult is good to do things like shuttle runs or you know, tempo runs on the turf? And, you know, what would you sub out instead of that if they can't do them?
Well, I think tempo runs and shuttle runs are really different. I think tempo runs, where you've got a very controlled acceleration, deceleration, most people should be okay to do that. I've always said, and we've talked about this a lot in our meetings when we're together, you've got to be careful, particularly with that adult male population, because you've got a lot of these people that are in prime Achilles tendon rupture age. We just actually had one of our, I would say, probably under 30 guys, who's a regular, morning regular, blow out his Achilles. But playing basketball, I mean, I would say luckily, but I hate when it happens in the gym. But there is some reality there. So I think when you're talking about summing up, mat runs, bike work, erg, if you've got somebody with a healthy back, elliptical, I really think whatever you've got is going to be great. I'm not a metabolic circuit fan. I just don't think it's the same, to be perfectly honest. But I know that's sort of the big industry darling right now is, you know, do kettlebell swings. But I'm sorry, I just don't feel like it's got the same kind of systemic effect. You know me, I'm a big stationary bike guy. And I think if you've got somebody that you're concerned with, that's going to be the best low-risk way to get some cardiovascular work in with somebody.
Doug wanted to know your thoughts on the RKC and StrongFirst certification and training cells, and if they or if we integrate kettlebell training into the MBSC Thrive or MBSC program. Kind of what are your thoughts on those kettlebell certs? Is that something that people should, you know, check out? Or I guess that sounds like what Doug is asking.
Yeah, I guess that's a little bit of a loaded question. We use kettlebells. Would I say we integrate kettlebell training? Probably not. I don't think we don't really clean them. We don't really snatch them. We will do some. I think we use them where they are effective. I think probably the most politically correct way to answer that is I'm not a fan of tool certs. I think you can get certified in tools, be it kettlebells or sandbags or ropes or these lots of things. And that's not, if someone said to me, where am I going to spend my education dollar? That might not be my favorite spot to spend it. And we're in the work, so if people think, yeah, I've got a little bit of a bias here, and I do, we're trying to develop a certification ourselves because we do feel like there's a need in the industry for a certification that's not tool-based, that's more, somewhere between science and practicality, somewhere in the two of those spots is where we really want to be. So I think if you got a ton of money and you want to spend it and you think that would be fun, go do it. I'm not sure, and I've kind of made the standing joke, but I don't think that your clients know the difference between RKC and AKC, to be perfectly honest with you. And, you know, I think it can be a little bit culty once you get in there. And people, they love it. We've got some RKCs at our gym. They love it. They train with kettlebells. They have a blast. And my feeling is, go ahead, have fun with it. But if you are asking me where to spend your education dollar, I think I'd try to look at something that would give you more of a knowledge base about the way to move the body, the way to train the body versus the way to use a particular tool. So, that's probably as politically correct an answer as I can give.
We got, this is interesting. A lot of times you come on, we get a lot of, you know, training athletes and stuff like that, but it's really good. We got some, I wouldn't say the older population, but we got another question dealing with the older population from Nigel. Hey, Mike, for a man nearing his 50th birthday who keeps fit and strong with full body workouts, what do you recommend going forwards regarding exercising safely but effectively in my later years?
I think the big thing is what people have come to dub joint-friendly training. I think you've got to find things that don't hurt. I know in my case, I'm 54, and I've found that the number of exercises that I can comfortably do is decreasing. I find that I really like standing cable rows, standing cable presses are really good upper body exercises for me. They're comfortable. So in my mind, those would be joint friendly. They've got a lot of freedom of movement around the shoulder. I can rotate to where it feels good. I think the big thing as you get older is that the warm-ups, the rolling, the stretching should be as long as the workout. So if you were looking at me now, I'm saying I'm 50. I'm looking at, if someone said, what are you going to do for an hour? I'm probably going to do 20 minutes of some type of cardiovascular work. I'm going to do 20 minutes of rolling, stretching, mobility, whatever, you know, warm-up, whatever you want to call it, and then 20 minutes of strength training. I think if you're one of these guys, and there are a lot of dinosaurs in our age bracket who are still going in, spending an hour pumping the iron, I think those guys are out of their minds. If you're still in that same kind of bodybuilding, body part mentality that you had when you were 20 years old and you're 50, that's crazy. So I like the idea of really spending time, because it's almost, you've got to be nice to your joints. You've got to be treating your muscle tissue much better. I always use the analogy, when we're young, it's like filet mignon, and when we're old, it's like beef jerky. And we're all going to move into that beef jerky stage, whether we want to or not. But you can really delay that by being conscientious about maintaining tissue quality, tissue length. I think if you get into your 50s and you've made some money, start getting regular massage work done. Probably one of the best things you can do is regular soft tissue work. Do your breathing work. I think for me, I really think my neck and my back have never felt better since I've been just incorporating a little bit of breathing in my stretches, in my warm-up. So those would be the things that I would really say to people, concentrate on. Don't be in there for an hour banging away. Don't be doing things that hurt. If you're icing joints and taking Advil and doing stuff like that after you work out, you're absolutely on the wrong path.
Kind of sticking with a similar topic, a question from Jason. I'm a desk jockey in my mid-40s. Often I will go into the gym and start my workout and clearly don't have it going that day. I can clearly see that I will not even match my previous workout, much less make any progress. Do you recommend that I should go ahead and give whatever is 100% for that day, or should I just take another day of rest? How do you gauge that?
I think you give 100% for that day, but you also, I always say I'm a big fan of knowing that some days you're going to just go through the motions and that's okay. Just go in, do what you got to do. I always think push, pull, legs, core, get some kind of, you know, whether you're an elliptical guy or a bike ride guy or a run, whatever it is, just get a workout in. I don't think you need to be looking at it and thinking, yeah, you know, I need to be 100% or I need to put in this amount of effort. I think the greatest value there is in the number of workouts done per year. Because the old expression, life gets in the way. I don't like the idea of taking days off, because I think, again, life gets in the way and you may have to take the next day off. If you're there, get something done. Even if you just go in and say, I'm going to bang out a set of push-ups, a set of split squats, a set of straight leg deadlifts, a set of TRX rows, so I push, pulled, hip dominant, knee dominant, boom, get out of there. Something is better than nothing. It goes back to the old Mark Verstegen said that in his first Core Performance book. And he was talking about nutrition when he said it, but I think it applies in a lot of areas. And something is going to be better than nothing. Getting in there, getting some kind of workout done. I always say some days I go in and I have an incredibly half-assed short workout. But that's way better than not working out.
Well, let's kind of change topics here and talk a little bit about business or, you know, people that own their own facilities. Albert wanted to ask if you could talk about the development and evolution of your training principles and how does it fit into your business and having the staff buy into them?
That's a good question and maybe a long question. I think the development of our business principles has been kind of a long process. I think initially when we started out, we were taking a college athlete's workout and applying it to high school kids. That was our business model. Try to get that 4-day a week summer program, 2-day a week in-season program, and apply that to high school age athletes. And that's what we did for a long time. I think we then evolved and realized that, okay, we can do one-on-one personal training with adults. We can do small group with adults. And so then I think you get into a situation where you're making what I would consider reasonable compromises and looking at this and saying, okay, what's most important? Because I think that's really what you have to look at. And you go back to someone seeing some of the early functional strength coach DVDs. We talked about kind of the big rock idea. What's your big rock? And I think that's where you start looking at, I think, tissue quality, tissue length. I always look at it when you really look at the process of what we're doing, it's probably really simple to look at. So we start with tissue quality. We foam roll. And then we move to tissue length in terms of we static stretch. And then we move to probably tissue temperature in terms of we warm up. Then we look at tissue strength. If you look at the process that way, I think it's really simplified, because now you look at it and say, okay, how important is part A? How important is part B? And as we said, I think as people get older, tissue quality, tissue length, tissue temperature, that stuff becomes a lot more important because we've got more miles on us. So I think when we're looking at it from that standpoint, if I've got an older client, I'm going to spend a lot of time with that older client trying to make them feel better. I've got a younger client. If I've got a young athlete, high school athlete, middle school athlete, college athlete, I won't say middle school because that's a different story, but if I've got those high school, college athletes, I'm going to try to get, you know, tissue strength is going to be a pretty big issue because the quality stuff is not going to be as compromised as I guess we might be.
And
does that make sense?
Yeah, and it looks like along the same lines, you know, finishing up that question, he was wondering, you know, when it comes to staff members, how do you make sure that they're, you know, also buying into the program, it seems? At least that,
Thank you. No, I'm glad you caught the second part of that, because I actually forgot about that. I got so into the first answer. But I think the big thing is we started out with our own athletes as our staff. So I think initially when we very first started out, I had real believers, people who had become better athletes throughout their college career or their high school career because they had followed our program. So it was very, very easy. We weren't working to get people bought in. Now I think as we look at staff and maybe as we move on, our internship process plays a role in that in terms of looking and seeing, okay, who comes in, who understands what we're doing, who understands, who's already bought into our way of thinking, who's maybe read the books or watched the DVDs or read some articles, and will have an understanding of what we're doing, and who looks the part. And I think, I hate to say it, but that's a really big part of my personal philosophy. I need people that look the part, because I think that's a really big selling point. And looking the part isn't, and we've talked about this a lot, it's not tight shirt, huge muscles. Most of our male coaches look like athletes. That's what I always said. Most of our female coaches look like athletes. We're trying to train athletes. So if you walk in, I want you to look and think, hey, that guy's probably a good athlete. That girl's probably a good athlete. I don't want you to look and think, oh, I wonder if that guy's on steroids. Because I think that's a really huge negative when you go in and you see somebody whose clothes are too tight and their muscles are bulging and his veins sticking out. That's not the look that I want. So it's different. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And it's something that you brought up a lot in the staff meetings too in the past. So if you are checking out Body by Boyle online, it's something that has also been addressed there as well. Talking about athletics, Blake had a question. Could you ask Mike Boyle about his opinion on what Lee Taft has dubbed the plyo step and its use in athletics? The step has also been called a false step. What are your thoughts?
I'm not a fan. I never teach it, and I try to teach people not to do it. I would say kind of fundamentally, it's the only area... I'll let this ambulance go by. It's the only area where I I would probably tend to disagree a little bit with Lee. And I think it does happen. I don't think there's any question, but I would look at it as a mistake as opposed to a technique that we want to teach. And I think if you really kind of investigate Lee's work, you'll get a better sense of that. It's a funny thing. I've listened to Lee talk a bunch of times, and I think that's something that people get caught on or caught up on a little bit with him, is this whole plyo stuff. I think there's a big difference between what you're going to do in an unsettled situation, a situation where you don't know what you're supposed to do next, which, again, versus if we're teaching movement, if I'm teaching somebody how to run the 40-yard dash, I don't want a false step. I want a plyo step. I don't want a weight shift back and front. I want all my weight on my front foot. If I'm teaching somebody to cross over, I don't want a weight shift from side to side. But if I've got somebody who's out there on the field, I will guarantee you that you will see that little plyo step, that rock, whatever you want to call it. So I guess there's a difference of, are you teaching it deliberately or are you not? So I would say we are not deliberately teaching it. We're not talking to people about it. We're not saying this is a good technique. So we're in a kind of different situation now.
This is something we bring up a lot in these interviews, but Scott wanted to know, Mike, what books have you been reading? And also a second part, last time you were on the show, you talked about HRV. Could you discuss how that's going?
The book I'm reading right now is called Strength Coach, A Call to Serve, which Jeff Connors wrote. He's the strength coach at East Carolina University. He's a guy. It's a really good book. Very interesting read in the sense because it's sort of an autobiographical training book. So you've got Jeff's story being told kind of in real time. And he's talking about what his athletes were doing while they were training at the same time. So it's pretty interesting. I really like it because he's 55. He's exactly of my era. Graduated high school maybe a year or two before me. Went through probably a lot of similar processes. I think it's a great read for people, young strength and conditioning coaches, because it gives you some sense of what the profession was like early on. So really excellent book. I would strongly recommend it to people. I think you can go to... I think he has a Facebook page, although I'm not 100% sure. I know he's on Facebook, and it's Jeff Connors. If you go on there, you can then send him a message, and they can get your book. That's what I did. I bought a couple copies, and his wife was quick to get back to me. So I really liked that book. As far as the HRV stuff, I haven't been doing it since baseball season ended, and I probably should start again, but I just sort of, to be perfectly honest, I've been lazy. I think in a lot of ways I learned what I needed to learn. It was very helpful to me during baseball season when I was under significantly more stress in terms of hours and basically, working double sort of between being at the gym in the morning and then going to Fenway and staying until at night and going back to the gym the next day and getting some sense. And I think it helped me get much more in touch with how my emotional state affects my nervous system. And I know we might not have talked about this on the FitCast, but I know we've talked about it before. I had a couple days where I had tough home days, where arguing, fighting with my kids, whatever it was, and then found that my HRV scores were really skewed down after those days. And I was very surprised that, yeah, I shouldn't have been, because you realize that you are, in fact, evaluating your nervous system. And in that sympathetic effect, you're going to get that as much from emotion as you are from conventional stress. I think that's why, I think as exercisers, we only think in terms of conventional stress and we don't look at life stress as being part of the equation.
Before we go on to the next question, something that we have coming up at MBSC in January is the winter seminar. It's returning after a 1-year hiatus. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that and the guest speaker that we have alongside of you.
I'm really excited because we're bringing Bill Knowles in, who I just was with at the Perform Better seminar down in New Jersey at Parisi Speed School, and he was really, really good. I think people are going to really enjoy listening to Bill. He's a guy, when you talk about sort of been there, done that in rehab, he's got just a super A-list of elite athletic clients that he's really been working on this kind of return to play, which is, I think, where he's got a leg up on everybody else. trying to get people back faster, trying to get people through the rehab process faster, and get them so that they are ready to play and they can continue to play. So he's a guy that I was looking forward to hearing, which is why he's the guest speaker at the seminar. What I usually do, and I've done it, I did it with Dan John a couple of years ago, is I pick somebody out that I personally want to listen to, because I feel like, and maybe it's a selfish thought process, but I feel if I want to listen to them, there's probably a lot of other people that do too, or if I want to listen to them, and maybe in the case of a guy like Bill, people haven't heard of him, they should take my word for it and start signing up, because I will guarantee you that it will be worth the trip. We have yet to have one of these seminars where people did not come away thinking, wow, that was a really, really good experience.
And for people that want to check out the registration, that's going to be on January 18th at 7:30 a.m. It's a Saturday in Woburn, Massachusetts, and you can go to bodybyboyle.com. Under the education drop-down menu, it's the very first thing at the top of the list, MBSC seminar registration, and it's all day. It's literally from 7:30 to 5 p.m. 5 p.m. We're going to be doing some hands-on stuff as well, and also Kevin Carr and Brendan Rerick are going to be doing a talk on the exercise progression system that we use at MBSC as well. So it's going to be a jam-packed day of presentations and education.
Yeah, it really is going to be good. I think I've seen the presentation or some of the content that Kevin and Brendan are going to be doing, and it's really, really excellent. And I've seen Bill, and obviously we're going to do some hands-on stuff at the end of the day where people can split up into small groups and kind of go where they want to go. They can go with me, they can go with Bill, they can go with, we're going to do a little bit of Olympic lifting teaching for people who might want to do that. We're going to do a little bit of kettlebell work for people that might want to do that. So I really think that we're going to be able to give people a really, really good experience. And they get to be in the facility. They can come in and train if they want to in the morning. There's just a huge amount of really, really good stuff that kind of will go on during that day. And I think what happens with a lot of people is you get to meet and kind of hang out with the staff. It's a really cool opportunity to be part of the MBSC experience, which in all honesty is something pretty cool in and of itself. So I would, and obviously I don't need to oversell it, but I really would want people to think, hey, this is a pretty cool opportunity for people to get involved in.
Yeah, come down. We got Muscle Milk is going to be there, and Perform Better is going to be there as well. So I'm sure you'll get some free goodies if you need any more of a reason to come down to Woburn. I'm sure the weather is going to be great, but you know, can't guarantee that. Also, we got a question coming from Australia from Colin. Mike, you have stated in the past that you dislike three-day-a-week training due to the difficulty of programming for this frequency. Have you changed your mind on this? If so, have you overcome the problem?
I would say, I think we would need to interpret that a little bit better and say, the reason I dislike three-day-a-week training in the off-season when we are comparing it to four-day-a-week training. So I think that's the big thing. And I always say, if we're thinking in order of what I like most, if it's off-season, I really like four-day. My second choice would be three-day. My last choice would be two-day. I wouldn't want to do anything less than two-day. In-season, we're stuck with two-day. So I think you got to maybe see the big picture a little bit better in that particular regard and realize it's not, 3 days is not ideal. I think if people have read my writing, I love the old line, a giraffe is a horse made by a committee. And I've always felt like 3 day training sometimes can really end up like a giraffe where you just got the neck's too long and the legs too long and the body's too short. You know, you don't have everything that you want to have. Yet the flip side of that, it's better than two-day training.
Before we wrap up, could you give people kind of a breakdown on what you have coming up? I know the Perform Better 1 days are continuing into January as well, but then not soon after that, it sounds like you might be getting busy again, and obviously we have tons of stuff going on at MBSC.
Yeah, we've got so much stuff going on. I know I'm going to speak. The only things I definitely have, I've got Perform Better in LA and Perform Better in San Francisco in January, and we've got the MBSC seminar. So we've got 3 weekends in January that are booked up out of, I guess, hopefully 5. I think there's five. I'm not even sure. I haven't looked at a calendar yet for January, but it's that will be a pretty busy month for us. And then I'm still more than likely going to be back at spring training and back into the whole baseball grind again. So it's literally one thing leads to another. I look at this and think, yeah, I got 3 weekends in a row because we've got, I think the 11th is Perform Better in L.A., and then the 18th is our seminar at home, and then Perform Better in San Francisco on the 25th.
Yep.
So I'll be get 2 trips back and forth to California in January for the day because I usually go out Friday and come back. More than likely, I'll red-eye back Saturday night, although for a while I was not red-eye flying. But now that I don't fly as much, I can kind of live with it. So I'll probably jump on a late-night flight and come back.
And for people out there who haven't been checking out strengthcoach.com, great deal, $3. I'm sorry, $1 to try it out for 3 days. And there's much worse things you can do with a dollar. And if you're training people, whether it's athletes or adults, it's kind of an invaluable resource. And there's just tons of stuff going on there in terms of articles, videos on the forums as well. So I just want to make sure we mention that because Anthony and Ben have been doing a great job keeping that stuff up to date. Anything that's been up on strengthcoach.com that's really stood out to you lately?
Oh, there's been so much good stuff, to be honest. It's amazing on that site, much like Body by Bro Online, that the content just keeps rolling and, you know, people just keep sending stuff. People keep posting to the forum. It's really amazing that you can have this sort of continual real-time discussion. Anthony Renner and I were talking about it when we were down in New Jersey. I said, people should just go out. If you pay for a buck and it doesn't work, I'll give you the dollar back. I'll give you an extra dollar when I see you. So you can come find me and say, I tried it, I didn't like it, I want my money back, I'll give you $2. And then here's one, it's funny, I just was looking at my email while I was doing this, somebody tried to sneak in one more question. It said, single most effective all-around beneficial exercise that can be used by anyone to improve their strength, flexibility, and stamina. And the funny thing about that, I always look at that question and think, that's the, can Superman beat Batman in a fight kind of thing. I don't really believe, you know, he said, you know, clean and press is the best one. I mean, it's actually, if you said clean and press, it's two exercises. I just don't think it's funny. You get that question all the time, but I think it's a really hypothetical question that doesn't have a good answer. And so I answer it that way in terms of, I don't think there is an answer to that. If somebody said, I'm really pressed for time, then do some complexes, do some dumbbell complexes, but try to get a little broader across the base in terms of where you've got a knee dominant. You know, we did one the other day where what we call the one dumbbell complex, 5 dumbbell snatches with each arm and then 5 goblet split squats with each leg and 5 one leg straight leg deadlifts with each arm and then 10 dumbbell rows with each arm and then 10 push-ups. Now you can look at that and say, I got some bang for my buck and I got it in a relatively short period of time. And I wouldn't get that, but the truth is it's 5 exercises, not one.
People out there that
the question anyway
absolutely the and for people out there that also want to check out Body by Boyle Online, we're going to run that same discount that we had from when Mike was on last time. So for about the next week or so, we're going to do $5, $4.99 for the first month. If you want to give it a shot, there's a 60-day money-back guarantee if you don't like the service. But, like we've been talking about, you should really be setting aside some time, you know, whether it's during the weekend or an hour a day to sit down and watch some of those in-services, watch those staff meetings, look at our programs that we do at the facility at MBSC for adults and athletes are on there as well. It's kind of crazy the amount of stuff that you get up there. So you can go to bodybyboyleonline.com/fitcast, and you can get a 1 month for $4.99, and then after that, it's the regular price. And like I said, you can always get a 60-day money-back guarantee if you are unsatisfied, but that's why we have that, because we believe you will be. So, Mike, I think that will pretty much do it for us. Thank you so much for taking your time. Like we said, you know, you're super busy right now, especially with the holidays coming up. So we'll definitely be talking to you down the road, and hopefully we'll see a lot of people at the Winter Seminar coming up in January.
All right, thanks, Kev. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Mike. Back on the show with me right now is Peter Barber of the PTAdvantage.com. You might remember Peter's been on the show a couple times to talk about the great stuff that they got going on over there. And of course, we've talked a couple times on the show, or you may have heard, that they are sponsoring the FitCast right now. And like I talk about on the show and in the past on the website and stuff, very strict about the people who I allow sponsor the show, because it's kind of like stamping my name and onto their product as well. So Peter, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Kevin. Great to be here.
we're going to be talking about some really interesting business stuff. So if you own your own business, like you have your own facility, or you're thinking about opening up a facility, or even doing some online stuff, this discussion is going to be huge for you. This is something we really don't do enough of on the show, is talk about the business side of fitness, because it's getting even more important going into the new year. Things are going to get ramped up a lot for everyone who is trying to lose that 20 pounds they've gained and get back in. And you might need to hire some more trainers because things are going to get nuts. So that's one of the first things that I want to talk to you about. And you definitely have some major points to kind of look out for when hiring in the fitness industry. So could you start off with that?
Yeah, no. So pretty much this is a topic that's near and dear to my heart, and basically because I've made so many mistakes in the hiring process. I've hired for your typical big box gyms. I've hired when I own my own small private studio, and even now with another gym that I'm involved with, you know, hiring is more of a mid-sized type gig with 20-30 employees. But the biggest thing about the business is maintaining the quality of the product that you're offering. It doesn't really matter if it's one-on-one training, group training, whatever it might be. And this can also include for different ends of your business, whether it's a person dealing with the memberships in your business, or if it's a trainer dealing with like teams or one-on-one, things like that. Unless you hire the right people, your business essentially is doomed. And so that's why I thought today it'd just be awesome to kind of do a little bit of recap on the different things that I've found. And I'll give a few examples as to, you know, different mistakes that I've made, and hopefully people listening from this can kind of learn from that and help grow their business as well.
Let's jump right into it. And I will preemptively apologize. I am going to be muting myself because my dog has decided to chew on his squirrel, which makes squeaking noises. So if I take a second to come back, that is why. So yeah, Peter, let's get right into it.
Awesome. Okay, so there's 10 major points that I've limited here, and the first one there is actually a no-brainer, but it's one that I actually haven't done up until recently, and I'll tell you a story about it. But it's actually called checking the references. For the longest while, I assumed that everybody was extremely intelligent. And what that means is when you have an opportunity to list people that are going to give you a reference, a positive reference in general, of whatever job you're going to have, typically there would be people that are going to give you a good reference. So recently, I was looking for a position. This was actually for a membership counselor, and this person sounded great in the interview. We had two consecutive interviews, and both times sounded great. Essentially I said, well, we're going to give you the job. But pending your reference check, and which I thought was a bit of a no-brainer, but I figured I'd call. And when I called the person, I said, hi, my name is Peter, and I'm calling from the Max Fitness and Conditioning Center, and we're looking to give this individual a job. Can you give me an overview of your experience with this individual? And her response was, yeah, this is a bit awkward. I wish he'd stop listing me as a reference. And just kind of went into this whole thing of like how he didn't show up for work and like he just didn't take any initiative. And so as a result, I didn't give this guy the job. But to kind of sum it up, and I know this sounds absolutely awful, but you know, people are actually dumber than what you think. So to safeguard yourself from these people, you just got to call the references. And sometimes it is just a matter of no-brainer, but you'd be surprised how many people will actually list previous jobs as references, and it actually won't be a good reference. You'll get a good overview of the person.
Well, so it's like one of those things you would want to trust people when they put those references on the application, but unfortunately, it doesn't look like we live in a world where you can trust everyone that you could potentially hire these days.
Most definitely. Right. So that's the first point. Second point is have a practical component to the hiring process. Again, this doesn't necessarily always have to be with training. It normally is in this industry, but it can also be within a sales capacity or admin capacity. But, you know, I'll give you an example. I was hiring a trainer a couple years back, and she had her kinesiology degree. So usually that's like a precursor. People think they know exactly what they're talking about. Not the case. You know, I asked her to do a particular stretch, and, you know, and she showed me a stretch, and let me tell you, it had nothing to do with the particular muscle I asked her to stretch. And you know, as a result, I just realized, like, and I told her, I said, you know, I can't hire you. You need to go back and learn your anatomy. But if I just went on paper, you know, and the interview and the conversation, it would have sounded great. And I could have put her in a situation whereby, you know, she was working with clients and, you know, telling them the wrong muscle groups and what they're supposed to work, and it just reflects so negatively on the business. So always have a practical component to your hiring process. Anyone can talk the talk, but the big question is, can they walk the walk? The third point is make the interview slightly inconvenient. In this day and age, unfortunately, it's getting to a point now where lots of times the company actually needs the employee more than the employee needs the company. And as a result, it's really hard to find people that have a really good work ethic and actually want the job. Lots of times they sound great in the interview, they give them the job, and the effort level just goes down through the floor. So what I typically do in the past, and it's worked quite well, is lots of times for training positions, they'll come in and I'll do an interview if I like them. I'll actually give them a 1 month free membership to the gym. And I'll say, okay, I want you to, you sound like a great candidate. I want you to attend the following different group training sessions and try it out for yourself. And then give me an email when you're done there at the end of the week. And then let me know what you think. And then we can meet up again for the second interview. You'd be so surprised how many people will just not even take the initiative to attend a few group training sessions to give me their opinion to get a job. It's like they just want to come in, get the job, get started. And if it takes any sort of effort on their behalf, it just goes terribly wrong. So I love sifting out those people because I make it slightly inconvenient. The people actually go to those classes and those group sessions, and you know, I see them in the gym using the equipment, and then they take the initiative to contact me. There's a good chance that person's going to be a solid employee. So I'd like to make the interview slightly inconvenient.
That's interesting. That's almost like for any case when you're going to give or kind of be doing something for someone else. We talked in the past on the show about holidays coming up. I was talking with Tom Venuto about this last week, but you know, people at the holiday parties coming up to you, "Oh, you're a trainer, you know, get, you know, help me out. What do I need to do to lose 10 pounds or something like that?" And then they just want you to like do it for them, and they won't necessarily like do the thing like, "All right, do a food diary for 1 week, email it to me, and then I'll help you out." Then you'll never hear back from them.
Totally. You got to make it hurt, essentially, like to some extent. And that's the reason why I don't believe in giving away free services either. You know, if something's free and it doesn't hurt their pocketbook or at least their time commitment or something, people usually don't appreciate it. So no, I totally agree with that concept. You got to make it hurt in some way so that they show a certain level of commitment. So the fourth one I have is don't hire friends and family. And you know what? I didn't listen to that. I'll give you a good example. A little while back, there was an employee that I hired, and it was a good buddy of mine. In fact, and I actually went out and hired him. I went out and offered him the job. Actually, didn't even apply because he's a great guy. But what happened was the business took some different turns and turned out that his position eventually came redundant. And so as a result, I came to the conclusion that we had to end that position. And eventually we did, and it was a really tough conversation. But what I realized afterwards is you know what, I probably should have done that about 3 or 4 months earlier. But because of the personal relationship that we had, I didn't make the right business decision. And whenever you get into that with, you know, hiring your friends or family or whatever, you know, your business vision is clouded whenever that's involved, and emotion gets involved, and no matter how much someone says I'll never let it happen, it always does. So as a good rule of thumb, if you can help it at all, try to avoid hiring your friends and family. It, as a boss employee relationship, it doesn't work out that great. Number five is set very clear expectations. Usually the way I do it is in the interview, I'll sit up and I'll tell them the good, the bad, and the ugly. If anything, usually by the second interview, I'll even be borderline aggressive. Just a little while ago, I had an interview and this girl came in for the second one. And I just laid it out. And I said, like, here's what I need. I need the following things. This is going to be the expectations. Every day I want you to send this to me. And I just kind of laid it all out point by point by point. And she actually called me later in the day and she was like, I don't think I'm going to be very good at this job. I don't think, you know, I didn't realize it was a sales focus on the job. And I, you know, and it's much better. And I thanked her for that because it was much better that she realized that. And I'd be very, last times we try to almost build up the job to be something that it's not. We try to like paint it with a pink brush and make it seem so high pie in the sky great because we're trying to hire somebody that we don't tell them realistic. You're better off telling some worst case scenario. If they still take the job then, they're going to be a great employee. You might have to do a few more interviews as a result, but you're much better off doing more interviews. The whole concept of, you know, hire slow, fire quick really applies in the situation. At least that's what I've found. Number six is find solution people, not problem people. And you can actually do this a lot with within the interview and actually telling them, saying something like, give me a possible solution for the following issue that comes up in this job. And ask them to come up with it on the spot. There's nothing worse than what I call problem employees. So these are people that come to you and say, okay, Peter, I got a problem with this. And I'm like, all right, so what are some possible solutions? And I'll just sit there and I'll look at them and they just wait for me to give them direction. These people are not going to drive your business. They're not going to grow your business, and they're going to be a thorn in your flesh. So if they can't come up with – and they might not necessarily come up with a solution that you like per se, but at least they're trying. So if you on the spot in an interview say, okay, give me a positive solution for this issue that we find in our business, and they're like, well, you could do the following – try the following things. At least they're putting some effort in there. You know, I always tell my employees I got an open door policy. You don't have to know the answer to everything, but I better see that you've tried to find a solution before you come to me with a problem. Number seven is have at least two interviews. That's an important one. And the way I normally do that is the first one, I usually try to have it very formal and I usually have a second person in there. And usually I actually don't lead that interview. I like sitting back. I like watching. I have someone else ask most of the questions and it's a little more formal type setting. That allows you to see how they operate in that kind of setting. It allows you to sit back and not necessarily ask all the questions, but see the responses to the question. It allows you to focus, make some notes. In the second interview, that's one where I say you can be a little more aggressive, a little more realistic as to what the actual job is. And it really sifts things out. You can kind of sit down. And I usually meet them for coffee. And I just say, listen, so here it is. Here it is. Here's the expectations. Here's what is hour-wise. Here's what is expectation sales-wise or number of session-wise or whatever it might be. And I just lay it out for them and say, like, are you still interested? So have one formal and one informal interview at least. Number eight is ignore the hiring pressure, which is really tough. So this is a situation whereby you're in your business and let's say – personal training is a great example because it's what I run into. And let's say you have a trainer that leaves. And you got, you know, six or seven clients, that need to be serviced. So you're on a bit of a timeline. Let's say all your other trainers are full, which was the case I actually ran into there recently. So all my other trainers were full and one left. And so I had some clients that need to be serviced. I'd already bought packages. What do I do? So went out there and trying to find people. And then you feel the hiring pressure. This is a time when you as a business owner, you feel like I need somebody more than they need me. And this is where you try to build it up. And this is usually where you make a mistake. And it's a mistake that I made was you hire someone that you don't think is perfect for the job, but you just kind of need somebody. So you hire them. Let me tell you, I did that. And in this case, it wasn't for one-on-one. It was actually for a group trainer. And I hired this guy. And let me tell you, I've never had more complaints. And the funny thing is, this guy, he had the degree. We had the training process and all that sort of stuff. But just personality-wise, I knew deep down inside he wasn't the right fit. But I did it anyway because I was desperate. And I needed some more people to do the work. But the amount of negative responses I got back from his classes reflected so much negatively. I would have been better off almost canceling classes for an additional week and find another person than I would be having that person do it. So eventually I had to let him go. And then I also had to call a bunch of clients that went to a few of his classes who complained and severely apologized and explained the situation and how we've dealt with it. So there was a huge effort there to have to even try to accommodate for that. So don't try to ignore the pressure as much as you can when it comes to you have work that needs done, you got to find somebody. Try to focus more so on the quality of the person versus the work that needs to be done.
Well, you just brought up a great point. That's something that, you know, Mike, who we just heard from a couple minutes ago, is always talking about when people ask him, you know, how do you hire people? He says, I look for personalities. You know, first and foremost, you got to hire good people, genuinely good people. You can always, you know, teach them the things that they need to know to coach or to train other people, and they can be educated elsewhere. You can't teach people how to be a good person.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I agree with that wholeheartedly too. You know, it's end of the day, you know, the fitness industry is a very personal industry. It's about forming relationships. It's about personalities. And if someone doesn't have a personality to do it, it doesn't matter how much education they have. You know, I know some really educated people who are very poor because they can't build a clientele because they don't have the personality for it. So it's really important to find that that proper personality. Number nine is develop a proper training process for new employees and a continued education plan for current employees. You know, it's kind of steps outside the hiring realm, I know, but it also doesn't too. One of my policies now, we have a group training concept and we call it Surge. It's a functional training, circuit training model that we developed. To go back to my other point, making it slightly inconvenient for the job, I've actually made it so that I have a full certification now that my new employees have to go through before I hire them. So talk about commitment. So what it is, it consists of 6 hours with myself. That they have is both presentation and practical on the floor that we go through, you know, how to use various types of equipment that a lot of people might not have seen before, like sleds and ropes and things that not every typical big box gym has. Also, we go through, you know, different movement patterns. We go through the actual rules and layouts of the classes. So we spend 6 hours together. Then I also make them attend each one of the group training sessions themselves and participate. Then I make them attend each one, and there's three different types that I make them attend. Three different styles, I should say, of group training. They also got to then shadow with an experienced trainer for each one. And then they got to do a written exam, and then they got to do a practical exam. So they got to complete all of that before they get paid and do their first session. So, and I know it sounds incredibly inconvenient, but what I found is that people that actually get through it, it's not perfect and it doesn't always work out necessarily. I still do get some duds every now and again, but I'm ensuring a much, much higher probability of getting a solid employee and ensuring the quality of the product that's being offered than if I didn't. It takes a lot of my time, but it's worth it because I get to stay consistent with what's being offered to my clients. And end of the day, that's of the utmost importance. So make sure you develop a proper training program, and then also for continued education. And you know, for those of you guys that are trying to say, well, Peter, you know, like I have a low budget, I'm still a smaller studio, I don't know how to do it. I'll give you a good example of how I did something there a couple weeks ago that didn't even cost me a cent. There was an NCCP course that the Olympic Lifting Association here wanted to put off because we have 5 or 6 different stations for Olympic lifting, which a lot of gyms don't have around here. And so they asked me if they could rent the facility to put it off. I said, well, no, how about this? How about you put it off? You can do it for free, but you got to allow 3 of my staff to do the course for free. So I had my staff go and do that course as a continue education thing. We had this great guy, Daniel Robitaille, come down from Montreal. And he has a lot of experience and a really great instructor. And so they got to get continuing education for free, and I didn't have to pay a cent. I just let them use our facility. So there's lots of ways you can get around that. And sometimes you do have to put out a little bit of money for it, but it is worth it because you're investing the product. But what I will caution you is a couple different things on that for current employees. Number one is have a set expectation for that employee, in the sense that if you're going to invest money and send them to a certification or to a workshop or whatever it might be, have the expectation that if they leave before, let's say, a year has passed, they need to pay it back. So that's the start. So that way you at least get the benefit of their education. And number two, you should only invest in people that have already been with you for a year. Because one thing I found in the fitness industry, there's super high turnover. And I think anyone that owns a business in the fitness industry can attest to that. So the last thing you want to do is to go through the pain of, you know, getting someone educated. And then, you know, and sometimes, you know, as a business looking for $500 for something that means something, but especially when an employee has left, it's sometimes challenging to go through that. So that's why I find employees should be with you for at least a year before you start investing in them, at least on a regular basis, and something that's going to cost the company money. The last thing that I want to get into for hiring, number 10, is you got to do brand focused hiring. So what that means is that you got to understand that if you sell the trainer that you've hired, you're making your business vulnerable. So what that means is that when that trainer leaves, all the clients leave and you're done. You're behind the eight ball again as a business. You know, I, I've made multiple mistakes with that, whereby we focus so much on the person. That's so hard because the person has the education, the person has the personality, and all that sort of stuff. But if you're looking at longevity of business and you want to grow it, you also got to realize that, you know, typically in this industry, a person only sticks around for 2, maybe 3 years tops, and maybe 1 year. It depends on the position and what they're getting paid, but it's usually not a super long-term position sometimes, but not always. So what's going to happen to the business when that trainer leaves, or that trainer quits, or that trainer moves away? What you got to do is you got to hire people that are really good at following a really good system. So what that means is that for my group training, I came with a certification. So that way I know everyone I put through delivers a high quality product, so that, like recently I just had one of my full timers move away to Alberta. And all my clients love them, but they're all doing okay now because I had some other people move in and deliver a quality product. So they're okay with it. But if, let's say, I didn't have a system in place and that individual or that old employee was doing his own thing on a regular basis and everyone loved it, but it was his own thing. Well, then when he left, how do I guarantee the quality of that product? So you got to only hire people who can follow a good system. You know, there's lots of people that are super talented and they have a lot of education and a lot of background, but they're what I call the wild cards. They kind of march to the beat of their own drum. They kind of do their own thing just because, you know, and typically their employees tend to like what they do. But because they're so unique, they're not fitting into your brand of your company and what you want your company to be. So that's why it's so important to hire people that can follow a good, solid system. Of course, that also means you have to have a system as well. I first learned this. There was a guy, one of the big box gyms I worked for. We had 26 locations in Atlantic Canada. His name, and I won't say his name here now, but you know, he built that business up really well. And I remember I flew up to head office there, and he looked at me and said, "Peter," he said, "what do you think I want?" He said, "Dude, do you think I want a person that thinks outside the box and that's always trying to come up with new ideas and is just this stellar outside the norm employee? You know, just they're the people that get the, you know, the 90% on every exam." He said, or do you think I want a very, you know, an average person, but is good at what they do and can follow orders?" And I was quite young at the time, so I was like, you know what, you look at, and I picture myself as this, you know, think outside the box kind of person. Like this is the person you want, the, you know, the key drivers in your business. So I said, "That's who you want." He said, "No," he said, "that's not who I want." He said, "I want a person that can follow a good system and can deliver a consistent quality product." He said, "You know what I want?" He said, "I want burger flippers." Yeah, and I was backed up. We're in the fitness industry. What do you mean a burger flipper? He said, "Yeah." I said, "This is an analogy, of course, but," he said, "you know, you look at McDonald's." He said, "I don't like McDonald's at all in regard to the product they offer." He said, "But you know what they do offer? They offer a consistent product, and they offer a product that if you step in the back room, you'll see it there, and I'll say, put frozen burger on pan for 5 minutes, flip frozen burger, take out mustard, put X number of ounces on burger." And it's all laid out in a perfect system. And as a result, it's not even a great product, but it's consistent. And so people know what to expect. And so that's why it keeps on growing. That's why they can get multiple, we don't know if they fired their cook last week or not, but we do know the product stayed the same. So, and that's a really roundabout way of saying it, but essentially it's all about brand-focused hiring. So hire people that can follow the systems that you put in place, because that's the only way you're going to save your business with employee turnover.
Well, you know, again, not to, you know, bring it back to Mike, but just since we just had him on the show, you know, he calls that, like, you know, program buy-in. He wants to hire people that are going to come in and do the MBSC program and buy into it, and not just come in and do like a program that they found off the internet that goes completely against every one of the principles that we have at MBSC. That is huge. That might be the biggest one, because if people don't believe in the program that you're doing at your gym, then they're just going to be, you know, causing friction and going up against you in the future.
Most definitely. Most definitely. And, you know, it's just so, so vital, and that I've, you know, and this is what I've learned, you know, and it's hard. It's hard in the fitness industry because it, like I brought before, it's so personal, right? And everyone wants to put their own personal twist. And it's the reason why you see all these, you know, different certifications, different twists on stuff. And it's not that anyone is wrong, but everyone kind of puts their own stamp. And so every personal trainer wants to put their own stamp on how they do things. But And so if you're a small studio, just like one or two, you just manage yourself, another person, you can probably do that. But if you want to grow a business, if you want to have multiple locations and you want to build in something that's bigger than just the people there, you want to create a company, you want to create a brand, you have to have amazing systems and have people that are in there actually buy into that system, just like you said. And then the next biggest thing after that, of course, is once you have a system and once you teach that system to people, well, then you got to make sure they're doing it, right? So then you need to have quality assurance systems. So what that means is you need to figure out a way so you're making sure that when people are doing their one-on-one training and their first initial assessments on their clients, or when they're doing the group training and delivering that system, are they doing it right? Because the only thing I can guarantee you is that if you leave and you don't check in on it, they're going to change it. And before you know it, you're going to go back a month later and all of a sudden that perfect layout that you had done is not being followed. So there's two things you do then. One, you can find out what the issue is, because sometimes there's a legitimate issue. That's why you need to be talking with your clients on a regular basis. You might need to change that system. Something might have happened to change it that you need to upgrade your system. Or it could just be because the employee's being lazy and they're just not doing it right, in which case you need to crack it down, make sure it's being done properly.
All right. So before we do wrap things up, I mean, we talked a little bit about this before, but you guys have some really cool upgrades going on at theptadvantage.com. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So essentially, we're just constantly trying to make the PT Advantage just a really applicable application for personal trainers, help them save time, help them make more money, because at the end of the day, that's really what it's about. Yes, we all get into it to help people. We all get into it to make people more fit, but it's really hard to do if you're not making adequate amount of money. So one of the biggest things we're doing here now is we want to make it easier. We're going to be making an upgrade. It should be done sometime mid-February there now, but we're changing it to responsive design. So what that means is that essentially it's going to be a lot more compatible and a lot better support for both any type of mobile devices or tablets or computers. It's so you can just be on the go and be able to tap into your clients much, much more effectively. Even on the back end too, we're completely upgrading it, because we're always talking with our trainers that subscribe to our system, and we're saying, okay, so when you're creating your programs online and you're prescribing that to your clients, how do you find that process? What feedback do you have for us? One of the biggest things we said was, because we have a massive database of 700 plus exercises, one of the trainers said we love it, but the problem was we don't have a search function. So we're like, okay, that's a great idea. Why didn't we think of that? So we're upgrading now, so people can just type in search for exercises instead of having to scroll down through the different exercises that are there. Another thing someone said was, I have loads of personal YouTube videos. I have my own YouTube channel, and you have a lot of great ones there. You have 700 exercises, but I want my own exercise in there. And we're like, that's a great idea. Number one, it alleviates some of our pressure to try to stay up to date on all the videos. But people like to have their own twist on it. Like we just said, it is personal. So people like to see the form that they prefer on different exercises. They like to see the variations of exercises that they like. And most trainers nowadays actually do have a YouTube channel. And they already have all these videos done. So essentially what we allow them to do is we allow them to organize it more effectively. So they can put it in there and create programs with their own videos, which to date they have a hard time doing, because they have the videos there, but how do you create a full-on program? Better yet, then once you create the program, how do you save that program effectively to get it again next time? So we did that. And then another thing a lot of people said was they want to be able to track things. So we just made another upgrade there, so people, clients can actually put in progress charts, and the trainer can check up on those charts and see how they're progressing with success. So like, it's little things like this that we're really trying to stay in the forefront of both the technology, but then also the practicality as a trainer, to figure out, okay, how can we make life easier and how can we help them make more money through online training?
Very cool. And we've had a lot of listeners check out the PT Advantage and sign up, and they've been with you guys for a long time, and I've heard nothing but great feedback from those guys. So the least you can do, go to theptadvantage.com, check out the demo page, watch some of the videos on there, see what they offer in terms of services and stuff like that. And it is super easy to use. Now, again, Peter, you and I talked about this in the past, but in the fitness industry, computer savvy doesn't tend to be at the top of, everyone's skill list, because we are so invested into, learning the best ways to get results with our clients. You guys have just made it really easy for anyone, even if you're not super computer literate, to go through the process of getting people set up and sending them programs and then tracking everything. So you guys have done a great job, and it's really cool to have you continue on the show as a sponsor. But, like I said, before we go, head over to theptadvantage.com, give the site a look. poke around a little bit. And if you have any feedback, you know, you can always email me through the contact page at thefitcast.com or kevin@thefitcast.com, and I can forward that stuff to Peter as well. And, you know, give us your feedback. Let us know what you think.
Yep. Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Like I said, the we also had that 2-week free trial. So, and I believe you click on our logo there on your website, that'll take you right to the webpage where you can sign for the 2-week trial, try it out. And like Kevin just said, let us know what you think. We're really open to feedback and to find different ways that we can improve it and service people more effectively.
Very cool. Peter, thank you so much for taking some time. And, you know, again, for people out there, it's going to be super useful when it comes to hiring people, because like we said, you know, it's getting to that point where there's going to be, you know, an extra 30-40% of people walking through that door trying to lose that holiday weight. So hopefully you're going to do the right thing and hire the right people. So, Peter, thanks again. We'll definitely be talking to you down the road.
Thanks a lot, Kevin. Enjoyed it.